All right, what is going on, my friends? Tony Steffen here, back with another episode of the School of Success podcast. And today I am joined by the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Bejos Koulian. What is going on, B?
Tony, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Dude, how's Chino Hills today, man? Sunny and beautiful?
Chino Hills is always sunny and beautiful. It pays to live in Southern California.
Dude, I'm looking out of my office window in beautiful gray Michigan right now, and I'm envious, man. I'm very envious.
Hey, by the way, as a nod to our recording today, I wore the shirt you gave me, and I'm confident that I was able to easily shoulder press the 75-pound dumbbells for 12 reps because of the shirt and not because of my strength.
That's right. So for everyone, obviously we don't have video right now, but that's the Detroit versus Everybody t-shirt, man. So glad you're repping the D, dude. Glad you're repping the D.
And thank you for that. I got two compliments on the shirt, so I will wear it more frequently.
Love it, man. Love it. So for those that don't know B, first off, man, I just want to say thank you to you for all you've done for me in my life. So I don't even know if you know this, but when I was 18 and when I was struggling to sell my $50 per hour personal training sessions, I went to YouTube, and like most people, I search how to sell personal training, and you were just crushing the SEO back then. I'm sure you still are with those key phrases, and all these Bejos Koulian videos came up. I was like, who is Bejos Koulian? What is this? And I just started learning, and I took in such a wealth of knowledge from your free content that led to me to invest in what was called Close Client. So one of your e-courses that taught me an immense amount of value. And then that led to me becoming a mentor client. And you took me at 26 years old, scared, nervous, overthinking, wannabe entrepreneur. And you got me from just a place of having ideas to where I am today, now running my full-time online business. So dude, thank you so much for the value you've given me. And I know the value that you've given to countless other entrepreneurs out there.
Oh, dude, my pleasure. And you know what? I got to be honest with you. It's been an epic experience working with you, man. You're young, you're motivated, you're driven, and you're helping so many people in an area in their life that they need it most, which is nutrition coaching, you know?
Oh, definitely, man. I appreciate that. So for those that maybe haven't heard of you, which is probably very few people, can you tell your hero's journey? Because it's such an inspirational story. I know you've told it countless times, but would you mind sharing it for us here?
Yeah, you know, I guess, yeah, you can call me the immigrant edge and the American dream. That's the best way to describe my hero's journey. And, you know, I believe everyone's got their own hero's journey. We don't leave this planet unscathed. We come here learning lessons and dealing with adversities and challenges. And I think those were some of the best lessons for us. Mine happened to be the Great Escape. My father was a member of the Communist Party in Armenia, which was under Soviet rule. And in 1980, I was 6 years old, and we escaped communist Soviet Union and came to the United States as political refugees. And while his goal was to bring us to a country that offered freedom and opportunity and experiences that we could never get in a communist country, unfortunately, we were broke. We came here, a family of five. I was the smallest, the youngest of the family at 6 years old. And man, we had under $100 to our name. We didn't speak English. We didn't understand the culture. And from the very first day that we landed at LAX airport, my dad got a job delivering newspapers the next morning. By the second day, he was delivering newspapers and washing dishes at a pizzeria. And by the third day, he was delivering newspapers, washing dishes, and pumping gas. And this was the story of my mom and my older brother and older sister. And we literally had to scrap for food, like out of dumpsters behind grocery stores, because the money that my family made from these odd jobs working well below minimum wage was used to, pay for the one bedroom apartment that we lived in. So, I grew up dumpster diving, being the smallest of the family. I was probably easier to lift up into the garbage cans or the dumpsters and fish out food. And, it was food that was expired, but hadn't necessarily gone bad. But, because it's expired, the grocery stores have to throw it away. So, it's ironic now that I coach personal trainers and nutrition coaches like yourself, because one of my biggest struggles growing up was a very poor diet. I mean, I just ate whatever we were pulling out of the dumpsters. And then later on, the government food of, you know, white bread, bologna, government peanut butter, government cheese, processed food. And so I grew up overweight and fat and had a really bad relationship with food and kind of low self-esteem because I was a foreigner, didn't speak English, you know, didn't understand the culture. So for me, man, those early years from elementary school to junior high to high school were just punishing. But looking back now, I realize every single one of those experiences, like when we didn't have the resources to buy food, we had to get resourceful and dumpster dive. And the fact that my dad kept teaching me, you know, hey, this adversity is good. It's building our emotional muscles, he would say. And as it turns out, I also got into the muscle building world as a personal trainer and a fitness guy. So I understand that the more weight that you press or pull or push, the stronger your muscles get. And my dad was right. The more adversity that you put yourself up against in life, whether by choice or by circumstance, like in our case, the stronger your emotional resilience gets. And as it turns out, you need to be resourceful in life and you need emotional resilience to really make it. So I'm super grateful for those, you know, crappy experiences.
Dude, thank you for sharing that. Was it, and I don't think I've ever asked you this, was it hard initially to share that story?
You know, it was, because more than anything, it was embarrassing, Tony. It was just one of those things where, and I think that embarrassment carried from, like, it's funny, now I'm more self-aware, and as I tell you the words embarrassing, I felt it in my gut. There was just this butterfly that I just experienced in my gut. But part of it is because as a kid, in elementary school especially, man, children are unforgiving. And when you don't fit in, when you're a foreigner and you don't fit in, watch out, man. You're going to get picked on. You're going to be called foreigner. You got a funny haircut. You wear funny clothes.
Sure.
And so, you know, to me, as a young adult or even as an adult now, not so much now, but back then, telling that story the first time, I was like, oh, crap. I'm reliving all those embarrassments and being called out. Like, the last thing I ever wanted to do when I got into high school was to stand out. I wanted to just blend into the shadows because I didn't want high school to be more like elementary school and junior high. So yeah, man, it was pretty embarrassing and difficult to tell the story, but each time you tell it, you realize how many people you're helping, whether it's from the stage and I speak to thousands or it's on a podcast like yours, through the YouTube videos, like you found me. I've shared my story from so many platforms now that every day, not a day goes by that I don't get a thank you message from someone who can resonate with that. And I believe that's part of my purpose on this planet.
Dude, absolutely. I love that so much because a lot of people who listen to this podcast is a mix. Some people want to learn how to get healthy, you know, nutrition, lifestyle, training techniques, mindset. But a good amount of people also are fellow dietitians or fitness professionals who have dreams and aspirations to help people like you have, maybe do have a story like that, but are afraid to tell it. And what I can just extrapolate from what you said is if you never would have opened up and told that story, who knows, you know, how much impact you could have lost out on being able to deliver.
Sorry, you kind of cut out on me on that one. Can you ask that question one more time?
Oh, I'm sorry about that. But what I said is, you know, a lot of people are afraid to share their story at first. But from what I can gather of what you just said, if you never shared that story, you would have lost out on potentially impacting thousands of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's always the scariest things that you've got to do that are going to cause you to have this growth in your personal, professional life or impact, meaning, or significance, you know, in your community, in the world that you serve, the industry that you serve. It's never been the easy things. It's always been about the hardships that, you know, talking about my hardships, talking about the abuse that I went through as a child, talking about eating out of dumpsters, having my hair washed with gasoline when I had lice and my parents couldn't afford lice treatment. So they used gasoline from they siphoned out gasoline from a parked car to wash my hair. You know, those are embarrassing stories to tell. Like, no one wants to tell those stories, but it's within those stories that there's what I figured out looking back here after, you know, 30 some odd years in this country now, there's a sense of vulnerability, of authenticity, and of connection that we make. And so we got to do the tough things over the easy things, no matter what.
So let me ask you a little bit further about that. So what you just said was powerful of it's the things that are hardest for us that tend to be the best for us. How do you get over that? Or like, what would you recommend maybe what you did in your own life? Cause I'm sure with starting your business, you know, the first time with coaching entrepreneurs and all that, and even with your personal training business, there were probably a lot of times that you maybe didn't want to do something that you knew would inevitably be good for you. How did you get over that hump, and how do you coach entrepreneurs to get over that hump?
You know, good. That's a good question. So there's a woman named Suzanne Jeffers, and she wrote a great book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And then most recently, about 2 years ago, it was a Mel Robbins who wrote the 5-4-3-2-1 rule.
Yeah.
Yep. Second rule, right. And they both are pretty much the same thing. And they say, look, the biggest impact, the most amount of income you'll ever make, the highest amount of meaning and significance you'll have all come from doing the most uncomfortable and scary things. That's both books say that. And then both, you know, so Suzanne Jeffers says, you feel the fear, you feel it, but you do it anyway. And then of course, Mel Robbins says, you count back 5-4-3-2-1, and then you just do it without giving yourself time to second think the idea. Otherwise you'll freeze up. And so for me, I could very, as a working adult, I can remember the very first time in 2007, February, gosh, I can remember the date, February 11, 12, 13, 2007, I ran a tiny little event called Fitness Business Summit. The very first time I was going to run it. And of course, I was selling, you know, coaching and consulting services to personal trainers and coaches like you. And, but I was using the internet to do the selling, man. But I knew, like, if I got in front of my customers, my audience, I could really deliver the message, the importance of how valuable it is to be able to market and sell your fitness services to the world, because the world is being marketed to by McDonald's and Coca-Cola and Snickers and Doritos. Then we have to outmarket them if we want to help the world be more fit, more athletic, more healthy. And so I go, gosh, I know over a 3-day period, I could have a lot of impact on people. Well, dude, the night before, I didn't even sleep. I was literally sick to my stomach of the idea of speaking in front of like 80 people. That's how many people were at Fitness Business Summit the first time.
Wow.
Like I was just nauseous, sweats. Like you would think that I had some kind of weird flu. And the morning of, I remember standing there and saying, hello, everybody. My name is Bedros. And as I'm saying that, my voice is cracking and I feel this bead of sweat running down my back. And I go, holy crap, like I shouldn't be doing this. But that was the first time that I realized, oh my gosh, I'm feeling the fear. Because I had read the book previous to that, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. I go, okay, you know, the voice in my head, as I'm speaking and trying to teach, the voice in my head is, dude, you're feeling the fear, you're doing it anyway. And she says, with public speaking, any minute now, you're just going to find your groove and it's going to kick in. Well, maybe I'm a slow study or something. It took me a lot longer. It took me like 40 minutes, you know, 2/3 of my talk, my first talk, to find my groove. My voice was cracking. I was sweating profusely, just pitting out. Like I had a blue shirt on and you could see like dark blue stains underneath my armpits. But when it kicked in, I knew that I was in my element and I go, holy crap. I just experienced a expansion in my abilities and I wanted to do more scary stuff like that as frequently as I can. It still is freaky. Like recently, the first time I spoke to a 3,000 person audience was a couple of years ago. Equally as scary, when the audience gets bigger, plus it's not your audience. I was speaking to financial guys and gals instead of fitness people. Cause I was a paid speaker at this event. You know, all of a sudden I go back to being that, they don't know me. They don't like me. They don't trust me. It's not like they've seen me on YouTube videos like you have. And so you very quickly go into this like fight or flight and the sweat starts beating down my back again. My palms start getting sweaty. My throat feels like it's dry. But within minutes of getting on the stage, I found my groove. And that speaks to the power of doing something over and over again, repetition.
Time under tension, right? Something you drilled in my head.
Time under tension. Nothing beats that. You know what? We can take someone in the gym and give them the best workout of their life, one good workout of their life, and they're not going to have this big physical transformation. They repeat that workout 4 to 5 days a week for a year straight. Boy, you won't even recognize them a year later.
Dude, and you're absolutely right about that. And it's crazy to even hear that, because I've been to fitness business some of the last 2 years, and like watching you on stage, even my wife has said this when she's watched you speak, she's like, he's just so polished and just articulates so well. But it's crazy to know that even you started off like super nervous and uncomfortable with it. And again, it's something I've even repeated back to my wife about time under tension. Dude, for my whole first year of coaching, I just like month after month, I've heard you say that phrase over and over. I'm like, damn, B, if you say that one more time, I'm gonna like lose my nuts. But you're so right that just, you know, and I see this like parallel into like entrepreneurship, because at first entrepreneur, like it's brand new to you, especially if you're coming from the world of like a salaried employee, right? Like you're used to being paid the first and the 15th of every month. You're used to predictability and you know, a work schedule and a boss telling you what to do. And then you move into a new realm, whether that's fat loss or entrepreneurship or public speaking, and it's so foreign to you. And like you said, it feels so uncomfortable. Your brain's like, get me the hell out of here. But if you just keep doing it over time, it gets easier. Would you say that most people fail because they give up during that uncomfortable phase in any change of life?
Yes, absolutely. And that's not just my opinion. That's a prescription. Like, that's a proven fact. You know, there's this idea phase, and then there's the, what I call the training wheel phase, where it's uncomfortable. You're like, I'm never going to be able to bounce myself on a bike. How do people bounce themselves on two rubber tires? It's impossible. This doesn't work. I'm not made for this. And so the training wheels keep catching you. And then all of a sudden there's the proficiency phase, right? And so most people give up just before entering the proficiency phase. They don't give up when they first enter the kind of training wheel phase. They try it. The problem is we're so quick in wanting results that we go, okay, I have this idea. I'm going to go in, let's use public speaking like I was doing. I'm going to go speak. If I gave up in 2007 because it was so bad and uncomfortable, by the way, I should tell you, in full transparency, I lost $14,000 at that event. I was too afraid to pitch or offer or sell anything to that audience. I lost 14. The event cost me money. Wow. That was my training wheel cycle. I had the idea 2 years before in 2005. I didn't execute till 2007. In 2007, it was scary. You know, I lost money, but I go, okay, let me try it in 2008. 2008, we barely broke even. Okay, it's still scary. It was still uncomfortable. It's awkward. And I'm a natural introvert, so I'm not organically made to go on stage and entertain and educate people. By the third year, like something clicked, and I felt like this obligation within me that I've got to take that stage and sell them my best programs and courses so these coaches and trainers can go out there and impact the world and help them become healthier. Like I felt like this. All of a sudden, I felt like if I don't get up on stage and sell you, then I'm doing you a disservice. Something clicked by the third year. Now, imagine if I'd given up year one or year two, Fitness Business Summit wouldn't have been this 11-year stretch that we've had so far, where we've impacted literally hundreds of thousands of fitness gym owners and personal trainers and nutrition coaches. So there are the three phases: the idea phase, the kind of awkward training wheel phase, and then the proficiency phase. Most people give up literally just inches away from proficiency because unfortunately there is no formula. I can't say, hey, Tony, your ninth month of trying to, you know, launch your nutrition coaching business, it's going to be successful. For you, it might be 9 months. For the next guy, it might be six. For the next guy, it might be 12 months, but it's going to happen. It's just when it happens, the question is, does the person have enough gumption to stick to it? Sadly, most people, I'd say about 90%, do give up way too early.
Wow, 90% from what you've seen give up too early.
Yes, sir.
That's crazy, man. Something you said there too about, you kind of alluded to reframing, right? And that's something you've taught me a lot. So for those that don't know, that's an NLP term of just like taking a situation and spinning it in a positive way. So that obviously is something you've done a lot in your life. Like you said, you use your, you know, initial upbringing, well, all that adversity, and you reframed it as adversity is good. That's not easy to do, right? That's not easy to do, especially when someone's in a challenging situation. Again, this could be life, business, health and fitness. How did you become so good at taking something that was a challenge, an obstacle, or a hurdle, and spinning it in a positive light and using that as momentum to succeed?
Yeah, Yeah, really good question, actually. And I discovered that in the gym because I realized, all right, because remember, I was a fat, overweight kid throughout elementary school, junior high, and high school. And it wasn't until my senior year of high school that I actually started working out, reading muscle magazines, and trying to figure out how to eat right. That's when I lost like 35 pounds and started to really gain some confidence and start putting on muscle. And boy, was it an awakening. My early 20s was such a self-confidence awakening for me. But the first time I realized what reframing was that, gosh, here I am in the gym feeling awkward. Like, I loved going in the morning because I wasn't as intimidated by the, you know, 5 o'clock p.m., 6 p.m., 7 p.m. guys who would show up and were just jacked and were grunting out loud. So I would go early in the morning, and it was typically like, you know, retirees at the gym and me trying to lose weight and figure out how to exercise. But I remember, like, okay, I'm sore. This is uncomfortable. It's intimidating, even though I'm in there in the morning. But every time I go, I start getting results. So maybe uncomfortable things are good for me. You know, that was the first time I kind of connected those dots where, again, uncomfortable things are good for me. It was years later that I read Susan Jeffers' book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. But really, reframing simply means that if you can take this thing that is otherwise a negative in your life and look at it through a different lens and go, what is the lesson here to learn from? What is the seed of good I can take away? Then you're going to forever succeed in life. And here's an example of a reframe that I did, and I'll break down that reframe. On the third year of Fitness Business Summit, I knew that I needed to get on stage and sell because I felt like a hypocrite thinking that I'm going to influence these personal trainers and coaches for 3 days and they're going to go out and do it. Yet I wouldn't offer you the course that you could take with you and study. So the way I looked at it was, gosh, in 3 days, I can teach you only X amount. But if I could sell you a course that you can then take and watch the DVDs and listen to the audio programs, you'll get better at understanding marketing, influence, persuasion, sales, the business of running a personal training gym, etc. Yet I had the course, but I was too afraid to sell it the first 2 years because I didn't want to pressure you into buying it. By the third year, the reframe was, if I want to make a big impact on this world through health and fitness, just like health and fitness has helped me, that impact is going to come from these coaches and personal trainers. And if I want to make an impact, then I have a duty and an obligation. So I took my fear and my trepidations and I flipped them on their ear and I reframed it as, I have a duty and an obligation to sell you my coaching programs, my courses, so that you as a coach or a personal trainer can make a bigger impact. Now going into it with a sense of duty and obligation instead of a sense of fear and intimidation, you have a way different attitude. And so most things in life you can reframe. Something bad happens to you, you don't just go, oh man, see, that was fate. I'm just destined to live a crappy life of mediocrity. Go, all right, this thing happened. My tire just blew out and I missed the wedding of the century. What is there to listen? To learn from this. Ah, you know what? How about a new skill set of learning how to change my tire? You know, I learned how to change my tire. I learned how to control my emotions and I learned how to overcome this, you know, tragedy that was unscheduled in my life. Like being able to overcome an unscheduled tragedy in life, again, teaches us emotional resilience. Going back to the first lesson I taught here on this podcast, emotional resilience and the ability to be resourceful when you don't have the resources are the only two things any human needs to make it in life and to make it good in life. Like, be resourceful. Figure it out. You know, can't say, I don't have money. I don't have the internet. I don't have anyone who says I don't have. My answer is, let's figure it out. You know, let's go to the library. You got the internet. Now it's free. I don't have the money. Great. Let's figure out what you can give away for free on Instagram and YouTube and Facebook in exchange for, you know, over time for a donation. You know, can you do some kind of coaching that you can give away using these social media platforms? And so all this to tell you that resourcefulness and emotional resilience comes from the ability to reframe and take anything negative, bad, tragic that's happened in your life and go, what is the seed of good or opportunity that I can extract for this from this. And if you can do that, you've got it made. Now, is it an overnight thing? No, because typically when something bad happens, right? Like, for example, my mom washed my hair with gasoline. And I was like, I remember asking her, Mom, why did you wash my hair with gasoline? She said, you had lice. And I, you know, we can't have you go to bed and, you know, with lice in your hair. I said, but why don't we buy the medicine for it? And she said, well, we can't afford it, son. But just because we can't afford it doesn't mean that, you know, you're not going to get the results that you need. And the results you needed was to not have lice. And so I got resourceful and we did it. And so she reframed the fact that this, in my head, I was like, oh man, we were broke and therefore I had lice. She reframed it and, hey, having lice just taught us resourcefulness, because she asked my dad to go siphon out gasoline from a car. He got like 2 cups of gasoline out of this, some parked car in the apartment complex we lived in. And she taught me that, you know what, no matter what, if your kid needs a solution, you're going to figure it out. And that reframe alone was like impactful in my life.
Oh, that's great, man. And you're so right, because that can go for any aspect of someone's life. They can go for, you know, if they've busted their ass in the gym and they're not losing weight, it's like, what can I take away from this? What can I learn from this? What, you know, what can I do to get better? Like you said, even if your car breaks down, it's from what I can really gather from you, it's we have the choice every day of not what happens to us, but how we perceive and how we interpret what happens to us. And it sounds like successful people, they just perceive things and interpret things in a way that will be beneficial to them and build them up. And unsuccessful people take the victim mentality or the poor me mentality or my life sucks mentality, that things are happening negatively against them. Would you agree with that?
That's exactly it. And another way you can look at that is you can say things are happening to me or for me. And the person who's good at reframing into a positive says, you know what? This flat tire happened for me because I learned the lesson of emotional resilience and the skill set of changing a tire and flagging down a car and all these things. Because at the end of the day, it's a crappy thing to get when your tire blows out and it's unexpected and you're going to the wedding of the century or dinner of the century or whatever. But that's it. You could either look at things as it happened to me or for me. And the moment you look at any kind of challenge in your life as in an event happening for you and what is a seed of opportunity you can extract, again, you won.
Dude, I love that. That's very powerful, man. So something else that I want to ask you about that I can kind of take away from that is, let's talk about overthinking and overanalysis. And I know I'm laughing because, again, probably the two biggest lessons, among other things, but the two reoccurring things I always took away from our coaching was, number one, don't overanalyze. And because that was me, and I think that's probably common with someone who's starting a new journey. Again, maybe it's fitness, nutrition, or business. You can tend to overanalyze and overthink a lot. So what are your tips for someone who maybe doesn't have Bedros Koulian to yell at them like I did, to get them over that hump of overthinking and something you've called paralysis by overanalysis? Like, how do people get over that and just execute towards their goals?
Yeah, well, you kind of gave it away. You execute. And here's why. You think about how the human brain is developed. It's three layers. And the most bottom layer, which is our oldest brain, is the reptilian brain. And the reptilian brain is our primitive brain, our caveman brain, our lizard brain, however you want to call it. It is designed for one thing, survival, to look for fear, for something trying to kill, the saber-toothed tiger trying to kill you. I just in my head imagine this, dude, that the caveman is looking out of his cave because his stomach is grumbling and he can see a tree over there that's got an apple on it. But his reptilian brain is always on the lookout for that saber-toothed tiger that's about to eat him, that's trying to eat him while he's trying to go eat that apple, right? And so the caveman then starts overanalyzing. All right, if I make a run for the apple tree, there might be a saber-toothed tiger around the bend, around the corner, around the thing. Maybe there's nothing around. But he had to have that reptilian brain overanalyze for the sake of survival. Now, today, we have a lot more information on hand. Like, none of us stepping out of our house have to worry about a saber-toothed tiger attacking us. We can, with good conscience, get in our car, turn it on, know that it's going to turn on, know that we can go to the store, know that we've got money in our pocket or on our credit card to purchase food, etc. But we still have that reptilian mind so that anytime we enter uncharted territories, a new business, a new opportunity, a new diet, a new workout, what if I get so sore that you know, I tear a muscle or a muscle breaks down? What if I don't do it right and I injure myself? What if I overtrain? I've heard about overtraining. I better do some more research on it. So the thing that overanalysis does is it causes us to do more and more research instead of to do the one thing that we need to do, which is to just take action. Because action alleviates anxiety. And the number one thing that overanalysis does is it creates anxiety. And anxiety becomes a loop. And this loop is now, okay, to help myself get out of this anxiety, let me see what kind of diet. Oh, there's a keto diet. There's a carb cycling diet. There's a low-fat diet. There's a no-carb diet. There's the all of a sudden you go, oh my gosh, now I got to research all these diets and see now the blood type diet. I got to see what kind of blood type I have so I can see what kind of food I should eat. Gosh, there's a nutrition coach here or there's a registered dietitian there. Which one should I work with? You know, this guy has testimonials. This guy's got a compelling story. And so we get into this overanalysis loop that creates anxiety. As it turns out, the solution for anxiety is action. And that's why there's that term, action alleviates anxiety. And if we could just do something, go in there and get a workout. Don't worry, you're not going to tear a muscle. And if you do, you're better off tearing a muscle than having a heart attack. I'd rather you tear a muscle that can be reattached than have a heart attack that might render you dead. And, you know, I always told clients, I said, well, I haven't worked out for years because, you know, I wanted to do it right. I didn't want to injure myself. So, you know, for all those years that you didn't work out because you couldn't afford a personal trainer, imagine how much plaque you built in your arteries that might give you a heart attack a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line, or a stroke. Like, I wish you would have gone into the gym. I wish you would have tried to lift heavy. And I wish that maybe you would have gotten a muscle tear or an injury or something, because I'll take that over a heart attack or a stroke any day. And so action alleviates anxiety. And the number one thing people can do when they're in that loop of overanalysis, which leads to paralysis, is just take some kind of forward momentum, no matter how little. And when you do, one step leads to another, and before you know it, you're actually pretty proficient at that thing, and it's never scary. You know, the reptilian brain comes up with the scariest thing, like the saber-toothed tiger scenario. The caveman thinks, it's going to get me and kill me. One, hey, Mr. Caveman, is there even a saber-toothed tiger in the area right now? We don't know. Number two, if there is it going to attack you? Number three, if it attacks you, is it going to kill you? Maybe it's just going to maim you. Maybe you'll survive. You'll fight it, right? But the human brain always goes to the worst case scenario. I'm going to end up broke. I'm going to end up dead. I'm going to end up humiliated. And of course, when we go to that extreme, it becomes so scary that we start overanalyzing. And of course, the paralysis sets in.
Oh, dude, you're absolutely right. And that was something that, you know, I had to learn from you very, very early on is you can sit all day and it's like a rocking chair, right? You can sit and rock and you're not going to move forward and you can just think about all the shit that could go wrong. But once you take action and once you move forward and step from the known into the unknown, you start to realize that all the worst things you possibly came up with, they only existed in your mind. And anything that does come up with, you can usually kind of handle with ease and then move forward. Because like you said, that's part of that emotional resiliency, especially when it comes to entrepreneurship, man. It's we always create the worst things in our own mind first than that would actually ever happen.
Exactly.
So let me ask you this, kind of shifting more towards like, you know, business, since that's, you know, your expertise now with coaching other entrepreneurs. Where do you see most new entrepreneurs failing at, like with starting off? So like, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see most new fitness, nutrition entrepreneurs make?
You know, the biggest mistake I see people making as entrepreneurs in the fitness, coaching, nutrition space is that they give too much thought into their brand and their logo and their knowledge, their information, and marketing and selling becomes an afterthought. And you can, the best example of this, I just talked to a guy, his name is Joe. I won't tell you the name of his company, but out here in Southern California, he owns it's a small little cafe, tiny cafe, like 8 chairs in it. It's like a juice bar up front, but a kitchen in the back where he makes meal prep. And it was successful. It was successful because he's from this area. It's weird. He's a guy who knows all about nutrition, works out like you and I do, but also loves to cook. So it was a natural thing for him to open up this tiny little cafe. It's a juice bar up front, restaurant in the back, or, you know, kitchen in the back where he makes meal preps. And you just go to the fridge and you get whatever you want for the day or for the week, and you buy it, and it's all, you know, carbs, protein, fats, all broken down on the label. Well, he decides he's going to open one in San Diego. The one in San Diego closed down 3 days ago after 2 months of being open. I said, Joe, what happened? You got this one here is so successful. The one in San Diego just failed so quickly. He goes, I don't know, man. I don't know. I said, do you think it could be from a lack of awareness in the community? He goes, yeah, well, no one came in those 2 months. So because he was well-known in the community here, he worked out at the local gym. He, you know, was a local person. He was a walking, talking advertisement. He was marketing here in Fullerton, and he didn't even know it. This is why his first location was successful. But he thought, well, it was successful because I built it and they came. No, he was a very outgoing guy, into food, into working out, into nutrition. Of course, he opens up the second one. He's not from that community of San Diego. He hasn't, you know, built any reputation in the area, and he has no rapport with local business owners, etc. And therefore, he opens it and he fails. So there was a lack of awareness. What is awareness? Marketing. So most people are too busy trying to build their product or service and not busy enough trying to figure out how they're going to drive traffic and make sales. And if you can just put enough focus on that, in fact, I'd say put more focus on that, you will be successful.
Here's something that most people probably don't even know that. So Fit Body Bootcamp is your franchise that you own and operate. And you built that up to a highly, highly successful business. And even like the Bedros Koulian brand for the longest time, like your coaching services, that didn't have a logo, right? Like that had no logo. It was the brand and it was everything built around it. But you're right. So many people are like, oh my God, you know, I need to make the sexiest logo ever. And what does that look like? And I can't start coaching people until I have my logo figured out. And what you're saying is don't waste any time in all that. That's just a waste of time.
Waste of time. I'm telling you, the Fit Body Bootcamp logo, we literally had some person in our office doctor up, and I said, yeah, that's good enough. At the end of the day, my logo doesn't matter if the product doesn't take off. And with my coaching business, I was too busy coaching and consulting people, coaches, trainers, nutrition experts like yourself, to even think up making that BK logo. The BK logo was made about 2.5 years ago, finally, after 15 years of coaching and consulting, when my graphic artist, who now I have a full-time graphic artist, because I've built the empire, I've got a multi-million dollar business. And he goes, hey, on my lunch break, I decided to take your initials and make a logo out of it. I was like, oh, great. I guess we'll use it. It wasn't my logo and my branding that built my empire. It was my marketing, selling, and then the delivery of the service. Everyone thinks that I can just deliver great service, which I know you can, but if you got no audience to deliver to and you have no skills to sell that audience and convert that lead into a paying customer, what's it all for?
Oh, absolutely, man. And that's a powerful thing that, and just for perspective, when we say like successful, like you built a 7-figure business without a logo, correct?
I built multiple 7-figure businesses without
a right. logo. Right. Multiple ones. Exactly, man. So that's cool. Thank you for sharing that. You know, something else that I know you've made content about before is millennial. So obviously I'm a millennial. A lot of people that probably listen to this are millennials. Millennials get a bad reputation, man, in the entrepreneur world or business world, whatever. But you've had a different perspective on that. So I'd love just to have you share your thoughts and perspective on, you know, maybe millennials, maybe we're not as lazy as people like to make us out to be.
You know what it is, man? Millennials just get a bad rap because my generation didn't know what to do with you guys, didn't know how to deal with you guys. Because up until then, everybody was taught, you know, hey, go get a good job, work in that job for 20, 25 years, retire with pension and a gold watch that says, you know, you worked there. And that's all great. And maybe they'll give you health benefits. That's all fantastic. Like, that's how I was raised. I had to break out of that mold. Well, you millennials, on the other hand, you guys were overly coddled, and even when you did wrong, everyone told you you could do no wrong, and you did right, and it's okay, you're still a winner in my eyes. And guess what happened? You guys actually began to believe that bullshit, and that is great. I wish someone would have told my generation, Generation X, that, because I actually thought, like, man, I don't have enough sense to go into business. I better go work in someone else's business and make them money, and they'll give me a check every 2 weeks. But as a millennial, you know what? Yeah, you guys were over-coddled. You guys were over-bubble-wrapped, and two training wheels were left on too long. But because of that, you grew up with this false sense of massive confidence, fucking brass ball confidence, which is great if you go become an entrepreneur. It's not so great when you come and work for a company like mine, like a MyFitBody Bootcamp franchise, and the first time I give feedback, it's accepted as criticism and that I'm yelling at you. And so what I look at it is, you know what? I've got these amazing people in my office right now, majority millennials, who have this tremendous confidence. You guys feel like you can do anything you want because mom and dad have told you that. Society has told you that. You're a winner. You got a ribbon, even if you lost and you came in last. Of course, the person who's dealing with you, when they try and give you feedback and it's accepted as criticism, that person gets pissed off and they fire you. On the flip side, I figured out, well, wait a minute. If I could just help turn this millennial around and say, look, feedback is okay. It's not always, you don't have to accept it as criticism. Let's build some emotional resilience. Let's talk about the idea of actually there's winners and losers. I've taken the time to invest in my millennials that work for me. Holy fuck, man. They've helped me build this massive empire, FitBody Bootcamp franchise, where we're making 5 million people every morning is what we're impacting every day with our FitBody Bootcamp franchise locations. And it's millennials running my corporate office, and it's millennials running our 642 gyms for the most part. And that's happening simply because they have this immense sense of confidence that they could do anything they want. All I've done is said, hey, by the way, in the process of doing anything you want and this tremendous confidence, there are going to be some winners and losers. And when you lose, that's not a direct impact on your self-esteem and confidence. That's the human condition, is to lose sometimes and to win sometimes. Your job is to win most of the time. That's how we become successful. And when you're given feedback, you can't shrivel up and die and assume that it's criticism. Feedback is simply correction by someone at the top who might know a little better than you, and that's okay. And so by taking a little time to correct just the small things, I was able to take advantage of their massive confidence that they have and build an empire on it, and then turn a whole bunch of them into amazing entrepreneurs like yourself.
Oh, dude, I love that. You're absolutely right. It's just being able to, it's almost like a reframe again. Like, you were able to reframe something that, you know, most people consider as a disadvantage and position as, no, actually, this is an advantage if you use it in the right way.
That's exactly right. Because at the end of the day, it's like this. Most of us, like my generation, looks at a millennial and goes, who are they to have that level of confidence to like have that much voice and decide that, you know, oh, I've only been working there. I've been working here for 3 months. I think I'm ready for an advancement. Like, that takes a high level of confidence for someone to go, hey, I've been working for you for 3 months and I'm ready to advance. The truth of the matter is that's because a false sense of confidence was put in you by mom and dad and school system and everyone who didn't want to hurt your feelings. That's good. That's a good thing. If I can just go, hey, look, in 3 months, you haven't even achieved mastery. So if you are willing to stick around for a year, year and a half, 2 years in this position and master this position, not just understand it, but master it, I will give you an opportunity to advance and make more money and make a, you know, have more control here. Now, I've had plenty of millennials that, you know, have taken that the wrong way and are like, well, I quit. Great. But those are they've gone, oh, you know what? Hey, thanks for that. No one's ever told me that before. Oh, cool. No problem. Yeah, that's called feedback. And I'm going to give you more of it because my job as someone who's a decade and a half older than you is to mentor you. That's all. So Generation X just needs to mentor the millennials instead of getting so pissed off about them.
I love that. Speaking of mentors, as we're kind of wrapping up here. So obviously your job now is you mentor, you know, fitness and nutrition and even above and beyond that, you mentor other entrepreneurs. But can you just speak about the role of mentorship and in your life now? Do you still invest in mentorship? Do you ever get to the point to where you no longer need mentors? Can you just touch on that a little bit?
To answer the last question first, I still do invest in mentors. Joe Polish is a mentor. I pay him $25,000 a year. Joel Weldon is my speaking coach. He's a mentor. I pay him a lot of money. Craig Ballantyne, while I don't pay him money, I look at him as a mentor. We're business partners. And I learned so much of life structure, because left up to me, I don't believe in balance. I believe that I'm going to go all in on business and entrepreneurship, but he's helped me understand life balance and structure better. And so, yes, there are mentors all around me even now. The moment that I stop seeking out mentors is the moment that I stop my growth and then start to fail, because there is no, now I'm going to stop my growth and maintain. No such thing as maintenance. So as soon as I stop my learning from mentors, I start to fail. Now, why learning from mentors? Why not just books? Well, books are great, but mentors are probably people who are in the trenches right now during the time of economy that we're in and doing it. Like Joel Weldon is a Hall of Fame speaker. He's had over 3,500 paid speeches that he's had to give. Like, while there's great books written on how to speak, those, you know, those books were written in the 40s and 50s and 60s. Well, we're living in 2018. Joel Weldon is alive and getting paid to speak today. He's negotiating speaking gigs today. I want to know how he's marketing himself, how he's selling himself, how he's negotiating himself, how he's getting referrals from speaking events now, not from an author from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. So the value of getting coaching and mentorship from someone who's doing it now, like, see, you pay me as your business coach. But imagine if I just professed but didn't practice. Imagine if I had no online business, because your business, your clients come mostly from the internet. If I had no online business, I was like, hey, you know what? In theory, I hear you can use social media to get clients, and I hear you could do a podcast to get clients. Everything I teach you is theory and not from practice. You should fire me. But because I've got a business that's growing like wildfire, and I use the internet and social media and podcasting, everything I'm teaching you, I'm doing. And so you get to see firsthand that it's working. Then you have the sense of confidence knowing that, hey, if I launch this podcast, that it is going to start positioning me as an expert, as a person of authority. And over time, I will have greater influence in the industry and market I want to serve. So mentors are priceless if they are in the trenches still doing what they claim to be doing. Mentors are effing imposters and hypocrites if they tell you they can teach you something that they've never accomplished themselves. And there's plenty of shitty mentors out there.
Did you, when you found your first mentor, and I think I remember it was like one of your personal training clients, did you know the value of mentors at that time? Or is that something that it kind of inadvertently happened and then you realize all along or after the fact that, wow, okay, this is something valuable. I need to continue to, like you said, never peak and invest in myself.
Yeah. You know what? I am so fortunate that Jim Franco, my third personal training client, took the time to mentor me after every workout. He'd just hang out for 10 or 15 minutes and he'd give me business advice because he knew that I was struggling as a personal trainer trying to make it on my own. And at the time, I have to say this, man, I didn't understand the value. I just thought I'm lucky that I've got a businessman as a personal training client and he's sharing some of his wisdom. I hadn't even heard the word mentor, let alone business coaching or consulting. And so I wish I had learned the idea of a mentor sooner. I would have maxed out my credit cards to have paid to get one. In fact, the moment that I started figuring out the more time I spend with Jim Franco, the more money I make, I started, because he worked out with me 3 days a week, Tony. And I said, Jim, you know, I appreciate you hanging out 10 or 15 minutes after every other workout and kind of, you know, educating me on business and marketing and selling. And sometimes he'd even bring in cassette tapes like Tom Hopkins and Zig Ziglar and Brian Tracy for me to listen to. And these guys were, you know, sales and marketing experts. I said, Jim, do you think if I gave you a fourth workout every week on the house, would you be able to carve out like an hour a week of your time to actually, I can come and ask you questions instead of just standing here in the middle of the gym where, you know, you give me 10 minutes of your time? He goes, sure, kid. And so I gave him a fourth workout. So in a way, I did pay Jim Franco ultimately to mentor me. I paid him with my time because I gave him a fourth workout every week for free. And then in exchange, he'd have me go to his office, which was about 3 miles away from the gym that I trained him in, and on Fridays. And then I'd spend his lunch break, his lunch hour, with him and his sister. His sister was his COO, chief executive officer. I'd sit there in their office while all their employees are working around them. And while they're having lunch, he'd give me that lunch hour for me to ask him any questions. And he'd just mentor me. And holy cow, what an experience that was. And after that, I realized, uh-oh, there's got to be others out there who are doing what I'm doing. Because as the internet came about, Jim didn't know much about the internet. So I started looking for people who are now on the internet doing this. And I, you know, found guys like Frank Kern and Andy Jenkins and, you know, started learning from them. And those are the, you know, Ryan Dice and Perry Belcher, the guys who were first actually making money in the early 2000s on the internet and taught me how to use the internet to have more influence and
and build a reputation so that I can build my businesses.
And something really quick here that, you know, I think is so powerful is people are so afraid to like max out a credit card or, you know, go in a little bit of debt to hire a mentor, especially with business. But something I know I've heard you say before is you would rather see someone max out a credit card and invest on themselves, bet on themselves and move them towards, you know, having that business that will sustain them versus doing what 99% of people do, which is, you know, put a car on there or put clothes on there or a vacation on there and then not ever be able to make that money back. Is that correct?
Absolutely, man. I tell people, look, the American way is to max out your credit cards anyway. Don't be a dummy and max it out on a vacation where you're going to go out on a vacation for 1 week, stress out during that week about how you're going to have to pay that credit card off the rest of the year. So you're not even going to be able to enjoy that. Instead, delay the gratification of a vacation this year and next year. Max out your credit cards on a coach or mentor who can guide you, who can, what I call time collapse, the rate of growth. What would take you 5 years, a good mentor should take you, should help you get there in a year and a half, 2 years to get. And that's time collapsing. Now you can go on a vacation that's 10 times as better, twice as long, and it's paid off or paid for without ever having to max out. Like that's the experience you want with a vacation, not to, you know, buy yourself a 1 week vacation and then spend the rest of the year paying it off. Good Lord.
Dude. And that's so powerful for everyone listening. That is exactly like what you just explained. That was exactly my life. So like I was about to quit my job. I took the last money I had and I invested in your 12-month mentorship. Now I think not even 2 years later, my wife and I were going on a beautiful 3-week trip to Europe. Online coaching business going to sustain and run itself. So much of a difference of a situation by exactly what you just said there. So the proof is in the pudding with that one, man.
It absolutely is. And you know what? It's the value of delayed gratification, man. And again, we're so used to getting what we want when we want, because when you look at the social media world now, you know, everyone's doing things and making their life look so amazing that it forces you to go, well, I'll max out my credit cards and I'll go on a vacation and I'll buy that fancy car and I'll buy that fancy watch. Dude, you didn't do that. You took everything you had and you clumped up that money together. And I remember how scared, I could hear the fear in your voice when you signed up for my coaching program. But though I looked at it in my head, and I didn't tell you this then, I can tell you this now. I was like, look, this young man's going to probably blow through his money anyway. He might as well give it to me so that I can help multiply it in a short period of time, as long as he takes action, right? If you didn't take action, you can throw all the money in the world you want at me. Nothing's going to happen. I can't, I'm no magician. But you took massive action, and now you're going on a vacation to Europe. You've made this public, so I don't mind sharing it. I saw that you bought a really nice timepiece, and good for you. You deserve it, because for 2 years, you've been busting your ass. We've been having our monthly coaching calls. There's been times in your coaching calls where I could hear the fear and the doubt and the self-criticism in your voice. But then I give you your marching orders and you take them. And because we've got this relationship where you trust me and I've got the experience where the hindsight of I've been there where you are. So I feel confident in saying if you take the next step, even though you've never been there, I promise you there's a step there. It's not a cliff. And you do. That's the whole relationship between a mentor and their client and a mentee. And so whether it's personal training, nutrition coaching, or business mentoring like you and I do, man, without a mentor, I mean, you're left to deal with a lot of frustration, a lot of fear. It's going to take you longer and it's going to cost you more.
Absolutely right. I love what you said, time collapsing. That's the biggest thing. So that's the resource we never get back is time. So you're absolutely right with that. So I want to respect your time here, man. We could go all day because you've just shared so much value, so much knowledge. If people want to connect with you or find you, like how can they do that? And then I heard there's a New York Times bestselling book coming out in September, man. What's that called?
From your mouth to God's ears, man. Yeah, on September 18th. My book, Man Up, comes out, and the book is titled Man Up, How to Cut the Bullshit and Kick Ass in Business and in Life. And it talks about the 6 pillars of leadership. And of course, the number one pillar of leadership is all about leading yourself, as in self-discipline. And the reason it's about kicking ass in business and in life is because how you do anything is how you do everything. So if you start taking care of your body, your business grows. If you take care of your business, your body improves, because those, everything's related. But, So Man Up is the name of the book, and you can just go to manup.com to learn more about it and pre-order the book from Amazon.
And of course, to find me, you just go to either of the three social media platforms that I like to hang out on, which is YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram, and just type in Bedros Koulian, and I come right up.
Dude, perfect, man. I'll link to all that. I'll link to the, because it's on pre-order on Amazon right now, so I'll link to that. I'm going to put it right on my bookshelf next to my Man Up hat and my GSD hat, dude. I'm pumped.
Dude, you are so awesome. I really appreciate you.
All right, B, thank you so much for the value today, man. Thank you so much for everything you shared. Thank you for taking time out, and this was absolutely powerful, man. Very impactful. So thank you again.
My pleasure. Keep crushing.